Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Well, it's been a wild week and a wild month so far for wherever you're living, but especially if you're in the Portland area. You know, we've had some smoky skies and some fiery skies. We've had a lot of hot weather. Not a ton of hot sports to talk about. If you're a basketball or football fan, there's not a ton going on. Football is just around the corner, thank God. It's, you know, mid-August, so we're just so close to opening day in the NFL. College football is right around the corner. You're probably getting your fantasy drafts ready. So, I mean, and that's almost a sport in and of itself, and we'll touch on that later. Most of what you do right now, though, is binge-watch shows to kill time while you wait for the sports to come back, the sports you love. Obviously, there's baseball out there. There's soccer out there. There's some other things that you could kill your time with. There's Canadian football. There's Arena League. I mean, there's some things that you could spend your time with. But for those of you that are like us that are just focusing on basketball and football for the majority of the year, this is the time of year that it's really tough to get through. And so that's where your friends, the television networks and movies, can really help you out. We'll get into that also. First things first, I want to bring in my good friend, Bryant Knox. He's a very consistent contributor to this show, a big-time partner. We really appreciate all of his time. He comes on week after week, even though we've told him that there's no restraining order or anything. He doesn't have to be here, but he's still here, and we love him for it. Bryant, how are you doing? Are you surviving the heat? Have you melted yet? What's going on in your world?
I've basically melted. I was having a conversation with a buddy just last week where we talked about how, you know, this summer is not too much unlike last summer, because last summer was very hot. It was one of the hotter ones on record. And we were talking about how this year we were not shocked, but almost pleased that we got hit with the heat up front, right? We got hit with the heat right up front at the top of the summer. And we thought, okay, well, last year it only lasted a couple weeks, a few weeks. So we'll get past it and we'll be in the pleasant Pacific Northwest and we'll be in the clear. But right. Yeah, it happened early. But it also just keeps on going, and so I don't know. I'm not a weatherman or anything. I'm not trying to make any big claims here, but it's crazy how the last two summers have been pretty wild in terms of the heat.
Yeah, I'll tell you, fall can't come soon enough. I mean, I'm desperate for football season just because I'm a fan of the sport, but also the cooler weather comes with it. And as fun as it is to see some games in the nice summer weather and not be in the rain or in the wind or the snow, it's still this week when it's been 90s and it was just 90s last week. I know if you're in another part of the country, you're probably laughing at us the same way you do in the winter when we forget to salt our roads, quote unquote. But it's still weird for us because we do not get this extreme of heat usually. Definitely not this humid, not this smoky. That's been bizarre the last couple of years. Global warming is real. I don't care what side you're on. It's real. The icebergs are melting, the summers are getting hotter, the winters are getting more extreme. This isn't my opinion, this is not Brian's opinion, it's just science, folks. Just science. If you have any opinions on that, you can take it up with Bill Nye the Science Guy. He'll tell you all about how Tom Brady did deflate the balls. That's all you need to know. So here we are, Pacific Northwest, Brian. It's the turn of summer where we're almost through it. It's the last month of it, really, you know. To me, maybe you were different as a kid, but to me, summer ended the day I stepped foot back at school. I don't know if you thought of it differently, like, no, Casey, there's still some summer left, even though you're at school all day. To me, the day after Labor Day was when my dreams died and summer vacation died. Is that how you looked at it back then, or is that maybe a little glass half full kind of mentality?
That's exactly how I looked at it. The older I got, while still in school, but the older I got, I felt like summer just ended sooner and sooner because I would start to see back-to-school commercials on TV in, like, late July. And honestly, summer ended the moment I saw my first back-to-school commercial. That's when the anxiety would kick in. That's when I'd start to think about my next class. And,
like, oh, man, I got to do all of my things right now. Summer's ending tomorrow.
Exactly, and because of that, they started like the preschool year parent days and whatnot earlier and earlier every year.
Right.
And before we knew it, like, our summer vacation was just over. And yes, there was still a whole bunch of time left in the official summer season. But yeah, summer officially ended for me, at least, when I started to see those commercials and all of the deals at the Targets and whatnot.
Now it's almost disappointing when you you throw on your favorite sports jersey or hoodie the first weekend of September. You're ready to rock your uniform or your jersey or your hoodie or whatever your team apparel is. You got the grill fired up. You got, you know, wood for the fire pit later that night. You got some friends or family coming over. And, you know, you realize it's 90 degrees outside, you know, and you don't have air conditioning. You're like, I got to find somewhere I can watch the game without melting.
That's a tough task.
It is.
It's downright impossible around these parts this time of year because we're just not prepared for it. Like, I know, like you said, there are going to be a lot of places around the country, they're going to look at us and point and laugh because the fact is we're just not prepared for it. But the reason we're not prepared for it is because we have the most neutral weather in the country year-round. I mean, right. It's going to rain a whole lot, and that's a bummer for most people. But if being soggy is your biggest issue for 9 months out of the year, then you're in a decent spot. And so I think that we can all realize that once we get through this, yeah, we'll be okay.
Yeah, there's just nothing better than like a fall crisp evening watching football. Got the window cracked, got buddies or friends over, and you know you're all just there enjoying the game, or you know best case you're at the game. But with HGTVs being really affordable and really huge these days, sometimes I prefer to do it in the comfort of my own living room. Not gonna lie, it's the stadium experience can come to me for once.
Oh, yeah. If I can get a 12-pack of, let's say, Coors Light for the price of one Coors Light at the stadium, I'm okay.
12-1's pretty good odds. I think you'd probably beat those odds, but that's just my opinion.
You know, cracking the window open is such a great point because this region that we're in may be the best in the country when it comes to hoodie and sunglass weather.
Yep.
And I'm talking combined. I'm not talking separately. I'm talking for a good chunk of time where you can walk outside and be very comfortable in a hoodie, but you'll need your sunglasses. Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect combo.
Well, and you've always got that friend or group of friends that wears the hoodie, shows up in a hoodie and sweatpants and complains about being stuffy the whole time. It's like, just take off the sweatshirt, dude. It's fine. It's 60 degrees outside.
No, it's a look. You got to keep the look.
So you just got to crack the window for him and get that crisp fall air in, and it'll be Halloween before you know it.
There we go.
So diving right into some football topics. We'll start with the Seattle Seahawks. Sure, you've heard of them. They've been around since the mid-70s. They're pretty good. They've won a Super Bowl. They've been to three. They've got a team this year. We're not really sure what to make of them. We'll try to figure that out as the season progresses. But first glance, Bryant, I'm worried, and correct me if I am wrong if you see it differently, but I'm worried that the Seahawks can win 8 games this year. Typically, they're the class of the NFC West, or at least in contention for it. They're a contender in the NFC to go into the playoffs and deep in the playoffs, but they made so many changes over this offseason. Some of them were chosen, some of them were not, but they just look like a different team. And let's start at the top. They fired both of their coordinators last year. So Daryl Bevel on offense is gone and Chris Richard is gone. They now bring in Brian Schottenheimer. And I'm blanking on the guy who's taking over for Chris Richard on defense. We'll have to get to that later. But new coordinators on both sides. You still got Pete Carroll at the helm. On offense, you have Russell Wilson. You re-signed Dwayne Brown to be your left tackle. You now can take George Fant to the right side, which they may do. They haven't really been specific about that. We'll see if they will. That should shore up your offensive line, get some protection. But Jimmy Graham, now in Green Bay. Luke Wilson, now in Detroit. So now your security blankets over the middle at tight end, those are gone. You also have Chris Carson coming back from injury at running back. You have Rashad Penny coming in as a rookie from San Diego State. We're not sure who's going to start between the two of them. So Marshawn Lynch, even though he hasn't been in Seattle in 3 years, his heir is still out there. We're not sure who it is yet. Thomas Rawls, I don't believe, is on the roster anymore. Christian Michael is not on the roster. So we're really not too sure what to make of the running game. Doug Baldwin tweaked his knee. They're not being super specific about what he did or what is ailing him. They're just saying that he'll be fine, quote unquote, for week one. I'll see it when I believe, or I'll believe it when I see it. You've got Paul Richardson, who was a very talented receiver. He's now in the other Washington playing for the Redskins. You've got just so many changes. And then on defense, you also lost Cliff Averill, who failed a physical. Michael Bennett, who was traded to Philadelphia. Cam Chancellor is not necessarily retiring, but he's not playing this year due to being physically unable, due to a neck injury he sustained last year. Earl Thomas is in a contract holdout. You've got Richard Sherman, who was cut in the offseason, is now playing for San Francisco. This whole team looks completely different. Can this new lineup win 8 games? Would you bet money on that, or do you think they're going to struggle to get to 500?
No, I wouldn't bet money on it. I think that 8 wins is a reasonable spot for them. I think that if you are feeling lucky and you want to throw money down on that, it's not the worst bet you could make across the league. But I have them as a 7-win team. And the fact is, the Seahawks that you talked about up front, the one that has a Super Bowl, and has been to a recent Super Bowl since, it's just it's not the same team. And I think that Seattle is probably headed for its first sub 500 record with Russell Wilson as the quarterback. And I actually do think that Russell Wilson is going to be better than advertised this year. I think that the improvements on the offensive line help him quite a bit. And I think that he has enough going for him that he is going to be better than some people expect. And that in and of itself could make this an 8-win team. I don't want to say they could be above 500 because 9 does seem a bit ambitious. But if they got it, I would be surprised, not shocked. Again, all that said, I think that this team has so much to figure out. And so it went over such... it endured such a facelift, especially on the defensive end or the defensive side of the football, that my personal pick is that this is going to be a 7-win team and that it's not going to have a winning record for the first time with Russell Wilson running the show.
Well, and it seems to me like you're in 2011, 2012 all over again, where you've got a franchise that has talent, but it's not a complete team. You've got a quarterback that you know can run the offense, just like you did with Matt Hasselbeck back then. Now, granted, he was at the tail end of his career and was having tremendous health issues, but when he was on, he was really on. You're not dealing with Seneca Wallace here. You've got Russell Wilson, the Russell Wilson, or as Dan Patrick likes to call him, Russell Wilson Jr. III. It's just, he can only do so much. Now, I'm not saying that we're taking anything away from him. He's up there in the top 10, top 5 quarterbacks in the league right now. If you were to ask a guy like Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or Tom Brady to come in and run this franchise as it stands today, I would not bet on them to win over 7 games either, just to be clear. I don't think it's Russell Wilson that's the issue. I think it's literally everything else working against him. He now has the Rams in the division. He's got an up-and-coming 49ers team that still has a lot of work to do, but they're kind of a wild card. We're not sure what to expect of them. And then there's the rest of the NFC that has so many heavyweights in it. And then even if they were to get through all that, they still got to get past teams like Jacksonville and New England and Pittsburgh and San Diego. And the list goes on in the AFC. So let's focus on just the NFC. Do you think they could win their division this year, I guess is the real question, because if they can't win their division, I have my doubts they can make the playoffs as a wild card. But is this a team that you think could beat a Dallas or a Philadelphia or a New York Giants or a Green Bay Packers or an LA Rams? I mean, is this a team that you would bet on to win some of those teams I mentioned?
No, it's really not. Like I said, I wouldn't be shocked by a 9-win season. I would be surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. But I just don't think that that is enough to cut it. And I think that this team is looking at, you know, not a full-blown rebuild as far as the future goes, because I think they have a foundation that they like. And Pete Carroll was quoted recently saying that, you know, I'm going to paraphrase here because I can't remember exactly, but he said, you haven't heard of our guys yet, but you also hadn't heard of Richard Sherman and you hadn't heard of these other guys. So that's what we do, is we make household names. And I love that arrogance from a head coach, but I also don't 100% buy into it. So I would be shocked if they were able to win it for sure.
Well, and they did a three-season reload technically last time from 2011 to 2013. And it worked, it paid off, and they were arguably the best team in the league those 3 years. Or sorry, from like 2013, 2014, 2015, they were one of the best teams in the league after the three-year reload, which took a lot to get going, and they had to hit on almost every draft pick. I'm just not confident that they can do that again. I mean, you've got really... I mean, they had Marshawn Lynch, who was ready to plug in the year they got him. They had Russell Wilson, who they got as a third-round pick, and he was ready to go as a rookie. You had Doug Baldwin, who was ready to go as a rookie. Richard Sherman was ready to go as a rookie. You got Cam Chancellor, who had been in the league for a couple of years and had bounced around, and he turned into being the right fit for the team at the right time. You had Brandon Browner, who came over from Denver, I believe, and also spending some time in the Canadian Football League. He just happened to fit Pete Carroll's style. You had Dan Quinn, and just one of the best play callers we've seen on defense in a while. That's why Atlanta's defense has been successful, even though they don't have the playmaking talent yet. You just had all these things cohesively coming together at the right time, and you had a good offensive line and a decent receiving core, and you had a really talented defense from top to bottom. Granted, all those were newcomers, but I love that Pete Carroll has that bravado about him and that he's confident he can make this work just like he did last time. But it's really hard to catch lightning in the bottle twice, especially with a full rebuild two times in 5 years. It's a little scary.
Yeah, I think the most important point that you just made there was that they really did strike gold multiple times in the draft. And they are, you know, that speaks directly to Pete Carroll's quote that I just paraphrased, is that they have guys who are trying to come up through the draft and they're trying to make big names, household names. But I think it's very evidenced by the fact that they tried to make their biggest moves in free agency this year. It's very evidenced by that fact that they aren't 100% confident in the fact that they're going to make these players that have been drafted in the last year or two household names, right? They went out and got a couple big-ish names in free agency, and I don't know if those were big enough moves to put them, you know, in the top tier, the cream of the crop of the division. And I suspect that they did that because they also don't believe that their youngsters are good enough to do that.
Yeah, I think that they're definitely talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're not in as dire of a situation as the Trailblazers are, but I think that you're getting some of that same feedback in the media that they really like their players, and you know, the average fan can say what they want, but they know they've got a game plan. They just got to go out and execute, and everyone's going to be a believer when it works, and that's the truth. When you are successful, everyone buys in and you're a genius. And when it doesn't work, no one buys in and you're not a genius. You're the opposite of that. A lot of people see you as an idiot. And I hope that that's not the case. But they've strained themselves so much and broken all these ties with these guys that they built from the ground up. And now all of those guys were cut for a variety of reasons, or traded for a variety of reasons, or had to leave because of health issues or disagreements with the coaching staff. It's just a little frightening how much of a rebuild they've had to do so quickly. I mean, this team was the top of the world in 2013, and here we are in 2018, 2019, and they are a shell of who they used to be.
Yeah, I mean, look no further than the Vegas odds. And I don't know how many people out there are, you know, actually looking at that too closely or take stock in it or, you know, put their actual hard-earned money down on these types of things. But in 2018 or ahead of the 2018 Super Bowl, the Seahawks were something like the 12th or 13th favorited team to win the Super Bowl. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's kind of what I remember off the top of my head. This year, they're at 40-1 odds as the 19th favorited team in the NFL. So that puts them well below the middle of the pack. It puts them, gosh, I can't remember off the top of my head. I wish I'd saved this. But it puts them behind teams like the Titans and tied with teams like the Broncos. And it's just, it's very, very clear that those types of numbers are not where this team was even just a year ago, but especially 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year. They've got a lot going for them, but I'm not sure it's going to come together this year. But we'll wait and see. Let's focus on some of the fantasy aspects of their roster. So by my count, they've got 5 players that people are going to look at drafting in their fantasy drafts. And to me, it goes in this order. You're looking at quarterback Russell Wilson. He's an easy pick as your quarterback. He's consistent. He puts up passing yards. He puts up rushing yards. He gets passing touchdowns. He gets rushing touchdowns. And he very rarely throws the ball into enemy territory and gets turnovers, whether it be interceptions or fumbles. He's really careful. He's got one of the best completion rates and interception to touchdown ratios in the league and over his career. Very safe bet. And he'll have to throw a lot if the defense can't contain the opposition. So he's an easy pick, probably in the 3rd or 4th round, depending on when you're going to draft a quarterback. You've got Doug Baldwin, who's one of the most reliable receivers in the game today. He's a little bit undersized, but he's got the Steve Smith mentality. He'll play against anybody and show him up, and he's really good at getting catches, really good at getting touchdowns, really good at getting yards. It all adds up, especially if you're in a PPR league like I am. He's a guy you could probably, again, get in the 3rd or 4th round. It seems to matter who you're drafting with and against, but granted, everybody drafts different, but you could probably get them there. You've got Chris Carson, who's supposed to be the lead back in this backfield. He's coming off the ankle injury last year. We'll see if he can resume where he left off when he got injured in the Indy game last year. He could be the Marshawn Lynch heir apparent. We'll find out. He's got the body type and running style to do it. And Seattle's gone all in on the running game this year. Speaking of that, they've got Rashard Penny, who is coming out of San Diego State. Led the nation in rushing last year. I think he had something ridiculous like 7 yards per carry. And he's a traditional 3-down back. He can catch passes out of the backfield. He can do pass protection. He can block. He can run the ball with power, with speed, whatever you need. But we're just not sure what to expect of him since he's a rookie. And a lot of people thought it was a reach at the time. And then the 5th player I think you're going to want to target is Tyler Lockett, who's the 2nd receiver. He does have some injury question marks from time to time. And there is some question mark about his route tree and what his ability is. But he's just one of the best speedsters on the planet. And he does really good punt returns and kick returns. He can get you touchdowns there. He can get you touchdowns through the air. He can get you a lot of ground and a lot of catches if you're going through PPR. Those are the 5 that I would say you'd want to target. I don't really think you can target any of them sooner than the 4th round and maybe not later than the 7th or 8th round. So it's kind of interesting, Bryant, that the team is kind of middle of the pack. And to me, these players that we would be targeting are kind of in the middle rounds. Do you think that plays some sort of connection to how they are as a team?
I do. I think that is certainly something that is not a coincidence. But I will offer one devil's advocate to what you just said.
Sure.
I think Rashard Penny is actually going to be a steal a little bit earlier. I like him quite a bit as sort of a breakout player. And I don't usually like saying breakout player as far as rookies go, because it's not as if they've had a bad season before that they're trying to bounce back from. But I like Rashard Penny kind of in the same tier as I like Royce Freeman, who is an Oregon Duck running back who's now in Denver. And Denver is a team that is known for A, using running backs by committee, but B, figuring out where they can really pump up a particular running back and get him started early in his career. And I think that Denver's going to do that with Royce Freeman. And I actually think Seattle's going to do that with Rashard Penny too. I think there's going to be a bit of a committee to start the year. But I think by the end of the year, if you snagged Rashard Penny somewhere in the top 50 to 60 picks, I think that you are going to be very, very pleased with that. And the reason I say that instead of rounds is because I know some people like their 8-man leagues. some people like their 12-man leagues. I know a couple people who do 16-man leagues, and I'm like, how do you even have decent players by the
they
end?
They don't. They don't.
I've never participated in one, so I shouldn't judge it too harshly, but that's just my hot take here. But I think that Penny is going to be somebody to take ahead of a Russell Wilson, just because I think that Wilson, you know, here's my take on Wilson. I think that Russell Wilson is going to be one of the best two-tier quarterbacks in fantasy football this year. I think it's very obvious that Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady are going to be your top-tier guys, right? But kind of right behind them, I like Russell Wilson. But what I'll say is, if you don't snag a top-tier quarterback, you're going to want to wait quite a while to start drafting those second-tier and third-tier quarterbacks. And with that in mind, I like Penny quite a bit. Like I said, in that top 50 to 60 range, I think he's going to surprise some people, and I think he's going to surprise some people within the Seattle organization. And that's going to be the most important part right there, is if he can surprise some people to really establish himself maybe early in the year, within the first quarter of the year, you're going to have a solid pick on your hands.
Well, I he's a guy that I'm high on personally. I'll just say, from past experience, it's really frustrating to draft a guy like that and then sit on him and sit on him and sit on him until it's about a week or two before Thanksgiving and you're looking for that gem out of nowhere to help you win the week and surprise your opponent. And you hear the whispers that he's going to get the start this week, and Carroll really likes him, and Brian Schottenheimer really likes him, and Wilson really likes him, and Chris Carson just hasn't been cutting it. And then you play him, and then it turns out he didn't start, or he gets, you know, 5 touches for 10 yards and a fumble, and, you know, was not what you wanted at all. There's other times where it's the opposite of that, and he'll have a crazy game where he'll have 100 yards rushing and 2 rushing touchdowns, and he's the player to have, and you've already got him. I get so nervous to spend higher draft picks on guys like that I'm going to have to put on my bench for the first half of the year.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it that it's sort of a high-risk, high-reward situation. But you know what? If it makes you feel any better, that's exactly what Pete Carroll and the Seahawks did. They used a first-round draft pick on him, which is why I feel like they are going to start with a running back by committee, and that's what they should do. And I think they're going to continue that throughout the year, but I also think it's going to become pretty clear that either, A, he's really separating himself from that committee, or B, Pete Carroll says, yo, we just used a first-round pick on this guy. We need to get him the reps and the touches to see if that was worth it. And, you know, you pointed to this really early on in this conversation, which is that Seattle is basically in a rebuilding year. I mean, I know that there's some familiar pieces there, but the fact is the Legion of Boom is gone. That's no longer their identity.
Not one player is still an active member of the team. Not one.
Exactly. And so they need to establish a new identity. And if going to your first round draft pick helps you do that, it's not only going to help their team, but it's going to help anybody who takes a risk on Penny in fantasy football as well.
I'm all for it. If you're listening and you're in a league against me, take Penny early. I don't want to have to draft him early. So take him off my radar so I don't have to worry about him in the first few rounds, because I don't want to draft him until at least like the 9th or 10th round. I think you're exactly right that he's going to be the starter sooner or later. I just don't know when that's going to be, and I have trouble drafting guys early that I don't think I can play to help get me some wins early on.
Yeah, and you know what? This is jumping way ahead in the conversation here, but that's actually, and it's on a very different level, but that's kind of the same way I feel about a Le'Veon Bell, is if you end up with the number one pick in your draft, yeah, you know that you're going to get a couple of really studly weeks out of him, and you're probably going to be able to rely on him if you make it to your playoffs, but the fact that he's in a holdout right now is really risky to take him with that first overall pick. He may end up with a slow start the first few weeks. And I mean, we all know, playing fantasy football year after year, that if you kind of wet the bed from weeks 1 to 4, it's really tough to come back.
Yeah.
Even if you have somebody who's going to put up super studly numbers later on. So, like I said, that's a very different tier conversation that we're having, but that's kind of what it makes me think of.
It's a good segue, though, because we need to talk about that, because we promised that we'd give him some tips on how to kind of go after your draft strategy. Personally, I'm old school. I like to have running backs in high inventory. I don't like to not have good runners. I'm not one of those people that just wants to have 10 of them. I want to have 4 really good ones so I can play 2. And if they go on a bye week, I can play the other 2. Or if we've got a flex, I can throw them in there. If somebody gets hurt, I've got a guy I know I can count on. And you have so, it depends on how your league is built. You have so few bench spots. You got to make sure those count, because sooner or later you have to cut somebody you do not want to cut, and you don't want to do that because you didn't draft well. So traditionally you're supposed to get runners first, but now that the league has gone to a passing background, so has fantasy football. A lot of people are doing PPR. That's what my league does. A lot of people are doing 3 receivers with a flex. Again, that's what my league does, because there's so many receivers and so few runners that usually you want to play 3 receivers or 2 receivers in a flex. However you want to set that up, you got to have guys that are catching the ball. So if you're drafting running backs now, you got to worry about, is it a guy like Le'Veon Bell, where he's not signing his franchise tag tender, and he's going to hold out till after training camp and probably join the team next weekend after the third preseason game. That's what he did last year, and I believe he did the year before that. He works out on his own. He stays in phenomenal shape. The problem is he's not in game shape, and it takes a few weeks to get up to that level. And if you go back and watch his output from the first few weeks last year, to Brian's credit, he started out slow. He wasn't injured. That's what it sounds like when you try to say injury-prone and injured at the same time. He wasn't injured, but he still had some pretty unstellar output the first couple weeks. But later on, he's amazing. So you got to draft some guys that can help supplement that. You're not going to get the best output out of a guy like that first couple weeks out of the year. So, Brian, what do you do? You know, don't give away your trade secrets if you think someone that you're competing against will listen to this, but how do you attack your draft strategy? Are you going for the best player on the board at the time, regardless of what player or position you need? Are you going after a running back first and then a wide receiver, or vice versa? How do you attack this?
I am typically going for the best player on the board, as long as I don't think that's going to contradict what I want to do in my second or third round. I don't know if this is a good strategy or not. I've won my league once ever, so maybe it's decent but not great.
Right.
But I typically plan out my first 3 or 4 rounds, and then I just go with the flow after that, because I can usually predict what guys in my league are going to do for the first round and the second round, and then I'm decent at predicting the third, decent at predicting the fourth, and I am just god-awful at predicting what folks are going to do from 5 and beyond. So I really do just kind of feel out the 5th round and beyond based on how things have gone. And I don't think that's a terrible approach, because I think adjusting on the fly is important in your draft. But I will say that if I have sort of a third or fourth round steal in mind, I may pass up on the best available player and go for something that's going to fit my roster a little bit better. Again, I'm speaking very vague because I don't want to give away anything specific. And you said that's okay, so I'm going to continue to do
right.
it. But I do think that I will take the best available player unless it contradicts my third or fourth round strategy. Then I'm going to take a risk and assume that my steals are still available.
So, for example, right now, Royce Freeman is a steal in the 6th or 7th round. A lot of people are trying to mm-hmm. get him in the 4th or 5th round. Mm-hmm. I would imagine, your alma mater being the University of Oregon, that you probably have more than one Duck fan or Duck alumni in your draft pool with you.
Yes, that's very safe to say.
How early do you need to draft a guy like Royce Freeman? If you're from the city of Portland, more than likely you're drafting with a fellow Duck fans. How early do you need to go get him?
Man, I definitely like him in the top 50 picks of your draft.
Right.
Especially if you're doing PPR, which you mentioned earlier, because I think that he is going to be a sneaky sort of halfback screen type of player this year. I think that you know, he has such a traditional running back build that you're going to think of him as a between the tackles guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that defenses are going to be so focused on that because he kind of does have a Jonathan Stewart type build to him. But the fact is, the offense had evolved quite a bit between when Jonathan Stewart was the running back and when Royce Freeman was the running back. And you can have Royce Freeman, a big built bowling ball type running back, set that very first block and then fade out, and you can get him on the outside for some very sneaky first downs. And so I actually like him in a PPR league specifically as a top 50 pick. And if you're feeling confident, like maybe I am, maybe he's a top 40 pick as well.
Right. If you've got a guy that you know you've got to have, you got to figure out when other people are going to take him, and you got to take him quicker than that. That's the way the draft works. No getting around it.
Yeah, here's my opinion on fantasy football leagues in general, is that you go get your guy, right? I think that if your buddies dog you for a reach, they might be right, but they're also the ones who didn't take the chance.
Right.
And they'll be the one at the end of the year saying, you know what? I took this dude, whether it be a Royce Freeman or whoever it may be, I took him, let's say, 15, 20 picks, maybe even before he was projected on ESPN or Yahoo or whatever it is. But if that's your guy and you're kind of basing the rest of your draft strategy on him, you go get him.
Yeah.
And I wholeheartedly believe in that.
You're going to get burnt either way, because if you don't take him and somebody else does and he has a successful year, you're going to hate yourself all year not having him on your roster. And if you do take him and he burns you, that'll suck, but at least you gave it a shot. You're gonna feel worse if you don't take it and that guy burns you.
Yep, no doubt about it.
So to close out that segment, I'll just say, typically my advice to people, especially newer folks, is do your research, see who puts up stats. A lot of people know who the household names are. That doesn't mean that they equate to a good fantasy player. Make sure you know who's putting up yards, who's putting up touchdowns, who's putting up catches, who turns over the ball frequently. Make sure you know your rules. If you're drafting blind, that's on you. You have the same internet everyone else does. You have access to this. It's at your fingertips because you've got a touchscreen phone. You get it. Make sure you do your research. I'll just tell you, if you're drafting with a pick in the first or second round and you take a guy that is not averaging at least 300 touches if they're a running back, that's including both running the ball and catching the ball, and then a receiver who's not getting at least 100 to 150 targets per season, you're really doing yourself a disservice. You need to make sure your first two picks are absolute studs. If you're not doing that, you're probably reaching way beyond what we've talked about, and you're going past guys that you need to help you win your league.
So yeah, I agree. I do have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
I'm super in the interest of, you know, going for your guy and making reaches, I'm very curious if you are or you are not, because there's always this guy. There's always this guy in your league who takes the top-tier quarterback way too soon. And I'm curious if you are that guy or if you sit back and laugh at that guy.
I typically sit back and laugh at that guy unless it's one of those rare situations where, and this year it's tough. I've done some mocks, and I'm not sure what you use. I use Yahoo. It's just what I've been on for years. It's what I'll continue to use until ESPN cleans up their app. But right now I use Yahoo, and they've just, the third and fourth round are kind of full of garbage right now. And I'm sure that those players will pan out as the season progresses, but you look at it right now, and I'm sorry to do this. You brought it up, so I'm going to throw it in your face. There's guys like Kenyon Drake that I just have no interest in having on my roster right now because they've got a rookie running back that I won't name, because if he's a guy that you're hoping to get, I'm not going to name him for the people that don't know him yet, but Bryant knows who he is, and he's going to be the starter by the end of the year. And so I have no interest drafting a guy like Kenyon Drake or Josh Gordon, who's probably not even going to play right away, because if you pull yourself out for issues, it looks great, except that it also looks bad because it means that there's probably something worse going on. There's also like LeSean McCoy, who will be in jail any day now, at least if his ex-girlfriend is telling the truth. Yeah. I will hold judgment there, but it looks like he's going away for a while. it seems like a Ray Rice situation all over again. And then you've got, you know, Allen Robinson is coming off an ACL tear. You've got all these guys that I have no interest in. So if it comes to that, and I have to choose between one of those guys or Aaron Rodgers, that's tough. I would probably want to draft Aaron Rodgers, but I'd still go after depth if there's somebody quality there. And there's a guy like a Stephon Diggs or an Adam Thielen or a Tyreek Hill that I can plug in as a wide receiver 2 or 3. I'm going to take them in the 3rd or 4th round. If I've got to be stuck with someone like Kenyon Drake, I'm not doing it. That's all I'll tell you.
I think that's fair.
But to be fair, if somebody drafts like a Tom Brady or a Russell Wilson or a Drew Brees that high, I'm laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every single year, and I'm in multiple leagues. You and I were chatting before we started here that I'm typically in about 4 to 5 leagues, and I've actually cut that down to 2 this year. So I'm trying to be.
He's getting help. He's getting help.
A little more focused, a little more responsible, a little more moderated. But every single year in multiple leagues, you have someone who takes a top-tier quarterback. We're talking Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, in like the 2nd round or the early 3rd round. There's
way
always that
too
guy.
Early. Way
and
too early.
Not only are they missing out on either a second-tier running back or wide receiver that they could have had, but they open the freaking floodgates, and then people start taking Cam Newton and Carson Wentz and these guys in the 3rd or 4th round. And, you know, if I'm, like, really, really high on Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, then sure, I might try to snag him in the 4th round or so. But I'm not going to be baited into taking my quarterback just because somebody opened the floodgates. And I always find it very interesting to see how the quarterback situation plays out.
I will gladly take all the running and receiving talent at that point and then use it as trade bait later on.
Exactly.
Because I'm going to have depth, and there's so many quarterbacks in this league right now. I can get a quarterback in the 10th round if I have to. You're not going to find quality runners or receivers in the 10th round. You'll hit a lucky spot once in a while for the guy out there shaking his head saying, you watch, I'll get my sleeper in the 10th round. Maybe you will, but most of the time you won't. The guy is not going to be there because the starters are coming off in the 4th and the 5th round. So if you're drafting your quarterback in the 2nd or 3rd, you're screwing yourself out of quality running backs and receivers.
I will say that I've in one of my leagues, my favorite strategy is to draft my quarterback in, let's say, the 6th or 7th round, and then immediately take Marcus Mariota after I draft my starting quarterback, because I do have one buddy who would trade the world just to have Mariota on his team. And I know that, leverage that.
You need that bait.
I leverage that every single year. So I unfortunately, he has figured that out. So I do find myself taking Mariota earlier and earlier, which is kind of counterproductive.
Yeah.
But it's still my strategy. So
at least then if you lose, you get to watch him squirm and you'll just put him on your bench and be like, just play him. You drafted him. Play him. Like, no, I'll let him sit there. It's all right. If you want to trade for him, you can.
Exactly.
Well, that's all the free advice we're going to give you, folks. We do have a pay button on the site that you can click if you want some paid advice. It will just go straight to our bank account. But, you know, if you want to pay for some advice, you can. Closing out the show, Bryant, we promised that we would tell them what to watch if they're in a pinch for something to do while they wait for their beloved football to come back. What shows are you streaming these days in the dog days of summer as you wait for football to come back?
Yeah, I've got a couple, actually. The one that I'm actively streaming right now is one that it has nothing to do with football. It's not topical at all. In fact, it's
doesn't
quite
need
dated
to be.
Because the series has been over for quite some time. But the one that I'm watching is House, which many people
classic.
May be familiar with. You know, it was one of those shows that I did not watch sort of sequentially when it was actually on television.
Right.
I would catch a new episode every now and again. I would catch a rerun every now and again. And I always felt good about the fact that I could turn on my TV and there was like a 40% chance that show would be on, whether it was a rerun or not. But nowadays, it's kind of like you don't know what you got till it's gone, because they no longer air it anywhere. And I felt like I wanted to watch it. So I've actually been binge watching the series, because you know, there's a lot of doctor shows out there. In fact, I've even seen a lot of promos for new doctor shows while I'm watching this series of House. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, one doctor show is the same as the next, as the next, as the next. But I think that this show in particular, there's a lot of character development and drama that goes into it that, yes, you're going to get to an extent with all of the other ones. And I feel like if you are a diehard ER fan or Grey's Anatomy or whatever it may be, you should probably just stick with that show because the other doctor shows aren't going to live up to your own expectations.
Right.
But this one in particular, you know, I can't remember exactly what his name is, but the guy who plays Gregory House, Hugh Laurie, he, you know, I keep telling my girlfriend this and she's not buying into it yet, but I feel a sort of like Ryan Reynolds vibe when I watch him,
really,
in the sense that he is very witty, but also has a very dry humor, a very almost insulting humor. And I love anything that Ryan Reynolds does. So I feel like this is kind of a good match for me. So that's what I'm currently watching. It sounds like you are familiar with the show. You had good vibes by it as well.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I've never really binged it before. I watched it when it was on, you know, a few years ago. But I think it's one I should probably revisit. It's probably one I haven't seen recently enough. It would probably be almost like new.
Yeah, I'm having a ton of fun watching it. Like I said, I saw enough episodes that I could figure out what was going on back in the day. But it is really fun to watch it all the way through. Going back to the football theme, though, I will say, And I'm going to preface this by saying it is one of my favorite shows of all time, and maybe I'm the only person on the planet to ever say that. I don't know. But if anybody out there knows where I can watch it right now, please at me.
Legally.
At Bryant Knox. Hit us on the comments. Let me know where I can watch this show legally and with quality, because the league, the so fantasy good. Football... it's such a good show.
It is anybody, a tragedy that it's not streaming, and I'm gonna. It is a tragedy. That's all I want to watch right now.
It was on Netflix for such a long time.
Forever.
I probably went 5 or 6 years in a row where this time of year, we're talking about the month to 2 months leading up to the football season.
Yep.
I would just binge watch the entire series.
Yeah.
And I could probably recite the lines. I knew what the next episodes were, but it didn't matter because I was just going to watch it anyway. And so the fact that, no, I'm not currently binge watching it, but if it were available, I 100% would be, which I think is why it's worth mentioning here.
I've got a friend who just bought the box set of DVDs just because they didn't know when they were going to get to watch again, and they can't wait anymore. I was like, That's extreme, you know. That's bold. I give him credit for doing that. I don't think I can. I think I'll just write Netflix a strongly worded letter and not email it to them. I will mail it to them, so that some poor unpaid intern has to read it, and then uncomfortably, awkwardly try to bring it up to someone that matters and gets just shut down stone cold, and then I get a form letter back saying thank you for your interest in Netflix.
I will say, as somebody who actually worked for Netflix at the time, one call center in the country in Hillsboro, Oregon, that would have been me sending that message back to you. So
what we need is like Mark Duplass and I'm blanking on his name, but the guy that plays Rafi and Nick Kroll. We need to like get them involved in like a Twitter war, getting them to convince FX and Netflix to put it back on.
I'm down. I'm definitely down. And by the way, my birthday is in exactly 11 months. So relevant. If anybody out there listening is already trying to think of what to get me for my birthday exactly 11 months from now, you know, you mentioned the box set. I'll just leave that there.
Well, we're running out of time, so I'm going to cut you off there, and I'm going to tell you a couple shows I'm watching, and then we're going to have to save the rest for next time. We'll make sure that this is not a one-time segment. We'll bring this back up next week. But for those of you that are fans of Stranger Things, and if you're not, we're not friends anymore. That's okay. But if you are and you like Stranger Things, you've been looking for something else to watch, you've probably seen previews for it and hasn't clicked yet, but you need to check out the show called Dark. It's a German show. It is dubbed, but I will tell you before you go, I'm not watching a dub show, shut your mouth. It's done really well. You can't even really tell it's dubbed. They actually found voice actors that match the face of the actor whose voice they're supposed to be, which you would think would be easier, but if you've seen dubbing before, it's always done terrible. It never lines up. Well, they did a tremendous job. It's a really neat show, different time periods. It starts out in the 80s. It comes back to present day. You find out there's some intertwining there and maybe some time travel. I don't want to give you any spoilers. It is very dark, though, so if you like the comic relief that's in Stranger Things, I'll just warn you, there's no comedy in this one. It is dark. It lives up to its namesake. The other one, and they are working on season two. Some of you people out there are one of those, I will not watch it if there's not at least two seasons. Well, there's about to be a second season, so watch season one. The other one I'll tell you about is on Hulu. It just started a couple weeks ago. It's called Castle Rock. It all takes place in the world of Stephen King. It's not actually written by Stephen King, just inspired by events in his stories. Really neat, really dark, really twisted. It has Bill Skarsgård, who you may know played Pennywise in the movie It. It has a whole bunch of characters throughout the Stephen King universe. It has Sissy Spacek, who played Carrie all those years ago. Scott Glenn, some really great acting by a whole bunch of people. And it's a really neat show, and it premieres every Wednesday, so make sure you check out that one. And then for your football fix, if you can't get the league, which you should be able to, we're going to work on that for you, check out Ballers on HBO. It's not a great show. I mean, it's got The Rock as a sports agent and Rob Corddry, who's just hilarious, as his partner in the agency. And they're going after football players who are not real, but it has Shooter McGavin playing Jerry Jones. You just can't miss. Season 3, I believe, started this past Sunday. So check out Seasons 1 and 2 on HBO Go or HBO Now, whatever you have. And then check out Season 3 as soon as you're caught up. But make sure you check that out. Get your sports fix before it's too late. But Bryant, thanks so much for being on this week. Really appreciate you making time. Definitely have to have you back on next week. So make sure you get a new list of shows for him, because they're probably going to be done with this list by the time we talk to him next week. And that's it for us this week. We'll sign off. So thank you so much for checking in, and we'll check you out again next week. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. He's Bryant Knox. I'm Casey Mamet. Check him out on Twitter, at Bryant Knox, at Oregon Sports News. We love you, Portland. Stay cool out there. Hopefully you'll cool down sooner or later. See you next week.